Okay. Okay, so Jamf software sponsor. And can we just dive in?
That'll work.
Okay, here we go. This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show, and that's our good friends at Jamf Software, makers of the Jamf Pro and Jamf Now MDM suites for iOS and related devices. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. But Bradley, how are you?
We've kicked off summer here in Chattanooga for schools are out, and I've kind of spent this week getting Macs from old teachers and getting them ready for new teachers. We like to do that early in the summer, just so it's one less thing to do during in service.
Yeah.
And one of the new teachers lives near me, so I actually delivered it to her house. So it's service with a smile right there.
Nice. Yeah, I'm starting to get some iPads rolling in. This week is the last week of our exams, and kids who are leaving school, they're sort of handing in their iPad at the end of their exam period and so on. So I'm starting to get a wee stash of them. And also, we had our last digital exam today. Those have gone really, really well. Basically, we've been using templates in Microsoft Word for most of that. Word has worked perfectly for us for the whole time. We also used gated access to keep the students in Word and not let them have access to anything else. And we also used the Ethernet USB adapter for printing, which also worked very, very well as well. So it's actually been a really smooth exam period this year. No problems whatsoever. So double thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I have all of our iPads, and I've been kind of cleaning them and reorganizing my JSS. We are just having different numbers of classrooms next year, so I'm having to move iPads around, and it's, you know, it's kind of tricky to like rename a device, so because I have it blocked where you can't change the name. So for me to be able to do that, I have to unblock that, and then it's kind of tricky. It's not foolproof on changing the name sometimes. Even when it's unlocked, it tends to take a while. And then I have the device name showing up as on the asset tag on the home screen or on the lock screen. And so I found that to get that to kind of change when I change the asset tag name, I have to exclude that iPad from the asset tag's, you know, profile, and then add it back, and then it kind of refreshes it. So
yeah, you've got to do something to force the MDM server to regenerate the profile for that particular device, don't you?
Yes, and it's just one of those things where it seemed like today, I don't know if Apple was slow or Jamf was slow. I kept getting a few timeout errors on my Jamf, so maybe it was them. It just, profiles were taking 20, 30 minutes to get rolled out, which is not even awful, but when you're sitting there trying to, like, I was moving six iPads from one group to the next, and it just took longer than I kind of wanted it to. Yeah. But I guess I should have just, like, done it and trusted it and then been done.
Yeah, I think more and more you just have to kind of say, well, I've pressed the button, it's eventually going to happen, it's fine, you know, especially if you're doing it sufficiently far in advance. The only problem I've noticed is when devices, like we see this at the moment with kids being on study leave or it being the holidays or something, that some people just don't open their iPad from the day they finish school to the day they go back to school. So stuff, work that I do over the holidays never quite gets to all the devices until we're all back at school. So that's something that just takes a certain amount of time as well.
Yeah, when you look at those like pie graphs, you want those ought to be green in your Jamf. And what I'm doing right now is I'm doing like a grade a day, and I'm plugging them in, letting all the iPads of that grade charge up to 100%. And then I'm going to use the Jamf command to shut them down. And that actually, the shutdown and restart command actually work really well. And I'm going to get everything. I'm like 20 devices away from having everything on 10.3.2. Of course, I'm sure 10.3.3 will be out at some point this summer, but I'll
you'll
just
have to go
and
press a button on every device to get it back up.
Yeah. And so we'll just turn them off for the summer and leave them off, and then we'll deal with that. And then, of course, there's a part of me that thinks that maybe I should just leave them on, but then, like, so they can get the other app updates. But I don't know. I don't want them to drain out over the summer.
There's actually some advice on that. There's an Apple document about long-term battery storage, and I send this link out to parents during the summer because we, over the summer holidays, unless a pupil's leaving school, we don't bring the iPad back in during the summer holidays. But what I do is I just have an email that I send to parents about this time every year where I give them a link to the Apple advice on battery storage. And the advice is roughly this, which is to charge it up to about 50 to 60%, I think, doing this from memory, and then shut it down. Like, don't necessarily have it at 100%, and power the device right off rather than just leaving it kind of, you know, fully discharged for a long period of time. Because I've had one or two devices come back after the summer and they just don't work again because somebody's left it completely discharged for like 6 weeks in a row.
Yeah, we had a staff member today it was like last day at work, and he said, I can't get my phone to work. It's a corporate phone. It was like, well, I guess I'll just have to, like, because he was going to, like, basically buy out his contract and, like, you know, just move his line to another line. And he said, I guess my phone's not working. I'll have to get in the phone. And it's one of those where when you plug in a lightning cable and you know, like, that's not in there all the way. Like, you can just tell. And so I kind of dug in there and literally pulled out a junk ton of lint out of his lightning. And so, yeah, I was like, hey, and then get it plugged back up. Then you snap it in there. You can tell when it goes in there. So saved him from having to buy an iPhone 7 2 months before the new phone comes out.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to have, like, a little plastic stick of some kind that you can use to dig about in a lightning port. I've had to clear mashed banana out of a lightning port before. I had a kid come to me just before the holidays and say, Mr. Spears, my iPad is making this funny beeping noise. And it was. I said, have you ever had anything spill in your bag? And like, they've got the clear back panel on the iPad and there's this kind of like disgusting creamy mess in the back of his iPad case. I was like, let's clean that out and see if that helps at all.
That's funny.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I thought it would be okay. It's like, nope.
So this week we are going to talk about some things we help we see in iOS 11 for EDU. And there's just some things like we've both kind of talked about how much the management is fantastic for iPads now, and like really getting into some very small nitpicky settings that would be nice. But we're going to run through those. I think we've got what, 17 of them. So we're just going to run through those. These are some things we're hoping we're seeing that the things that we're make iPads work better in schools, things that would make our lives easier. So,
quick trailer before we go into that, Bradley, if we can. I recently did an episode of my other show, Canvas, on Relay FM, about wishes for iOS 11, but these were more kind of like general productivity things. That's, I think, if I remember rightly, that was Canvas 36. We'll put a link in the show notes to that as well, but if you want to go and listen to that. But the things that we're going to talk about here are mostly different from the things we talked about in that show as well, so you can get the full set of wish lists, if you like, if you listen to both shows.
Absolutely. We'll have a link for that in the show notes. First one is a desktop mode for Safari, and we talked about this before, and so we'll kind of reiterate that. But what does this look like in practice? Honestly, I don't have a clue. I do know uploading and downloading files on iOS is way better than it used to be. I mean, it's really easy, works well. In fact, I mean, you can do it to iCloud Drive, you can do Dropbox, Google Drive, it works well. And but the web is still terrible, and copying, and I think a lot of this boils down to like highlighting text and selecting text can often be be terrible.
Yeah, selecting text and also like dealing with JavaScript navigation stuff, you know, where you're supposed to hover over something. I mean, I think most people must be hopelessly confused by that. But Safari does have a way to deal with that, which is that you tap the element and then you tap it again to sort of behave like a hover and then a tap. But, I mean, how many people will ever really understand that that's how that works? I think there are actually some third-party browsers, Bradley, that do implement a kind of cursor mode. I seem to remember the Puffin browser does that. And if you've ever used any kind of screen sharing software like Screens or Amazon Workspaces or something like that, you often get like a little trackpad space in the bottom corner of the screen, where if you drag on that area, that moves the cursor, and then that is like a remote control for your cursor. And I think that's one way it could work. I mean, I don't think any way that you implement a let's pretend there's a cursor in Safari mode will actually be nice or be true to iOS, but I think that, you know, the fact that web developers are just constantly making a mess of mobile sites suggests that we might want to think about something like this.
Well, and for me, the big thing would be web content management systems like WordPress and our you know, site manager for
Squarespace.
Yeah, they're all tough to use. They're just built for the desktop. Let's see. Second one. This one was mine as well. The clear camera roll via the MDM. And so this would be helpful end of year. And so you would only send the photos to the trash. So it wouldn't, like if you, a user would still be able to recover them within 30 days. So, if you've just got an iPad that kids have screenshotted stuff over the years and you really don't want to wipe it to start all over, you're happy with the setup, but you just want to wipe out that camera roll. And then you had a note here. What was that?
The idea of being able to force empty the photo trash as well, because I had a student who had this problem where he had filled up his iCloud photo library with about 5 gigs worth of photos. So we went into the Photos app, we put the ones he wanted in Google Drive and deleted the rest. But they were all in trash, so he wasn't actually getting the iCloud space back until they expired out the trash. So we had to sort of force that to happen as well. You can do that. You can go in and manually empty the trash as well and then sync it up. But it takes a bit of time to think through all of that as well. I think that's a good idea, Bradley. I would be very curious if they ever did this, because this would be the first MDM command on iOS that can actually destroy data. Not counting like removing an app from a device, but apart from that, this would be the first thing on MDM. Say somebody hacked into your MDM, they could send this command to all your devices and all the photos could be wiped. Obviously, you've got the recovery mechanism in place there for getting it back out of the trash. But if you're like me and you've got 30,000 pictures in your iCloud photo library, getting them all back out of the trash might be a little bit painful. I'm not saying that's a reason not to do it, but I'm saying that would certainly be a new step in terms of the kind of things you can do with iOS.
Yeah, I could see if it is implemented that it only can send it to the trash, and so that way you have the 30 days on the device. If it was ever implemented, or obviously, it would still. I think it would be 100% supervised over the air device, or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty marginal who gets to use that. I don't think it's going to be widely available.
So what was the next one?
Forcing Wi-Fi off. This was yours as well, I think.
Yeah. So basically, the idea would be to either force it off or force it on. So my idea here is, we have, let's say if you've got really young students and maybe the apps are using don't require Wi-Fi, so you don't even notice it, sometimes the Wi-Fi can get flipped off, and well, then that iPad can't get app updates, can't get configuration changes. And honestly, you don't really know until you kind of go investigate, like, hey, why is this app had never taken this config?
Yeah.
And so what you could do is say, okay, force these iPads, Wi-Fi always has to be on. So if they tap it, it just immediately comes back on, or just disables that feature or something. But then you could also have a way to obviously exclude devices if you had an administrator who's going to be traveling, need to turn the Wi-Fi off on a plane or something.
Yeah. I think I have actually seen this happen in Primary 1. Kids like to see that they like to make the airplane turn orange, right? And they don't know what it does, but they know that they can't get on the web after they do that or whatever. Not that the Primary 1s really use the web, they're more using apps, but I've definitely seen that exact thing happen in my school where some devices, it's like, why is this device never update? Why does it never get this app? And then you eventually figure that out. I slightly suspect that there would be a legal problem with that. If you're talking about also preventing people from using airplane mode, I suspect, in fact, I almost kind of know that it would probably not be legally possible for Apple to ship a device that can be configured to never be able to turn the radios off just because of airplane safety requirements, I think. But I get the idea behind it, absolutely.
This next one was yours.
Yeah, you know how you've got low power mode on the iPhone? How come we've never got that on the iPad?
And then obviously a way to force it on, like make it where it's mandatory after a certain percentage.
Yeah, I would be interested to know. Yeah, maybe like if in a school situation, once you get below 50%, it maybe offers you rather than 20%. But I would be interested to think, if you're in low power mode, how does that affect how rapidly your MDM commands can get through to the device, for example? Because I suspect that might be what... It's not documented what low power mode actually does, but I suspect push notifications get slowed down quite significantly in that area as well. So even just having it on the iPad, I think, would be pretty good. And I'm sure there'd be some kids who would basically have it on all the time anyway. But it's pretty effective on the phone. I mean, I don't know if you feel that way, but I find when I'm traveling or something, having low power mode on just really kind of ekes out the battery for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It would be a great feature, especially if you're doing standardized testing and someone forgot to charge their iPad or something.
You could
squeeze it out. Next thing is force a content blocker via the MDM. So the idea here is you could push something like, say, one blocker to the iPads, and maybe there's some way to even, because one blocker obviously includes a lot of settings in there as well, and maybe there's some way to even configure that where you could say, okay, inside of the content blocker, configure these things, and so like obviously they have adult content mode that you could just stay on that couldn't be flipped off in the settings.
Yeah,
and this would kind of help with help school admins with offsite content filtering.
Yeah, that's something that's always been a little bit tricky, is offsite content filtering. And I think what you've got there is you've got some aspects of that capability, in that you can certainly install the app quite easily, and you can also, if one blocker supports it, which I don't know if it does, but you can actually send a configuration dictionary with your MDM installation, so you can actually send settings to the app as well. So in principle, if the app supported it, you could also send in your MDM command. You could send, here are all the things I want turned on, and here are all the things I want turned off in one blocker. So you could set up one blocker automatically for the student. But then you would also need a command or an ability to say, okay, now in Safari settings, force this content blocker to be turned on. And that's something that I know doesn't exist at the moment, but that's kind of your point there, Bradley, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of like the... if you're not letting kids turn Bluetooth off or something like that. And and you could even obviously whitelist certain websites. So if you wanted to whitelist things that didn't work properly with it on, you could do that. Yeah. So that would be good. I know, and the beauty of something like that for one blocker is they wouldn't, since it's not running through their servers, it's not like they would have a big influx of traffic. They would just have more app sales. Everything happens locally on the device.
Yeah. I mean, the Safari content filtering is nice in that it happens on the device, and it's a yes/no decision. It's not necessarily it's not like a VPN or something where they're inspecting your traffic as they go past. But I also kind of think that another way to look at that, I was sort of thinking it more from the point of view of, like, you've already got this global proxy setting that you can set on iOS, but what I don't want is, I don't want to have to like route everybody's traffic. All I want to do is say, are you allowed to get this URL, yes or no? And to have something like that, you could run like a small EC2 instance where all your devices just go to that and ask for a yes/no response, in kind of like a content blocker. But I think maybe your idea is perhaps more elegant because it requires less infrastructure to be done on every device. So, yeah, I don't necessarily want to run a web cache or a proxy for this, but I want something that kind of lets me have a bit of control over that as well. And I wonder, I don't know if this is even true, but it would be interesting if, like, some of the web filtering products actually also provided a content blocker app that could work offsite as well. I mean, I know the way that most of these things work is they say, oh, just block Safari and use our browser instead. I'm like, yeah, right, that's going to happen. But something like that, I think, would be perhaps a more elegant solution than what I was suggesting.
Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. Now, Jamf Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing all your Apple products in your schools. They have over 3 million students that are using Jamf-enabled products every day. Bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in the classroom today. Start a free trial at jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. So, what is next on our list? It is a brightness limiter MDM control.
Yeah, I've been going on about this one for years now. And what I see is that some kids just love a bright iPad, and a lot of, it's maybe one of my superpowers is to be able to spot an iPad at 100% brightness from across the room. But, the screen backlight is the number one most power consuming part of the device. And even if we could just say, like, in MDM, say maximum brightness 80%, okay, and maybe also maximum volume perhaps as well. I think that would be helpful because, there are some kids who need that just to be persuaded that I'm not kidding, that this is what's killing your battery, not the fact that, you had your Bluetooth on or something. Just being able to have a wee bit of more control over that parameter would be helpful.
Again, that could be tied in with some sort of low power thing. And that would, one thing that would be nice is if that low power mode, you could even control how it was configured. Maybe you could do everything but leave, push notifications on for your MDM commands. Can maybe think about that. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Next one on the list is separate Bluetooth on and off from pairing.
Yeah, so this is kind of goes along with your point about Wi-Fi, Bradley. We since I think 9.3, maybe no 10 was it was I was 10. We've had the ability to prevent the setting. I think is called prevent Bluetooth changes, right? And what that means is whatever state the Bluetooth is in when you drop that profile on the device, that's how it will stay. So if the Bluetooth was off when you drop the profile, it can never be turned on. If it was on when you drop the profile, it can never be turned off. But the problem with that setting is that it's too broad because it actually controls two different things at the same time. It controls A, whether or not you can switch off Bluetooth, but B, it also prevents the user from making any changes to paired devices, except Apple Pencil, actually. Apple Pencil is given some kind of special workaround for that. So even if you prevent changes to Bluetooth, you can still pair a new Apple Pencil to the device without taking that profile off. But what you can't do is you can't pair like a new keyboard or something like that, or a pair of Bluetooth headphones or something. So I, from time to time, I mean, it's not like every day or anything, but from time to time, kids will come to me and they'll be like, Mr. Spears, I want to pair my Bluetooth headphones with my iPad. Can I do that? And I say, sure you can. Give me a minute and I exclude their device from the Bluetooth profile and then I let them do it. Or give them like 24 hours and then I put them back in the profile and things like that. So I think actually what would be good here would be to separate the control of the Bluetooth state being on and off from whether or not the user is allowed to pair new devices. Because I care about one thing, which is keeping the Bluetooth on for Apple Classroom, but I don't care what they pair to their device, speakers, headphones, keyboards, whatever they want. I don't really have any interest in controlling that. But I do understand that some people might, okay? So if you have a Bluetooth storage device or something, I can understand why some people might not want people to be allowed to pair any kind of Bluetooth device. But for me, I don't care about that. All I care about is keeping Bluetooth on. So I think separating those two controls out into two separate controls would be, that would be a big improvement for that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I just realized would be fantastic. This is like a pipe dream. Imagine like workflow, but for your Jamp setup. So say a kid brings you that thing. So imagine you could have a workflow that says, you know, modify Bluetooth settings for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You could do that. It would say, you know, ask for the iPad name, type in the iPad name, hit done. And it would like automatically undo the profile. Mm-hmm. And then 30 minutes later, re-add that iPad.
I wonder if you could do that with the API, because I mean, your GSS has got a full REST API behind it. I wonder if you could do that, because so workflow has got some stuff in there.
So, like, but the key is, could you figure out a way to do it? Like, I mean, obviously, I'm sure you could figure out a way to do it, or like enable and disable, but like figure out a way to do it, and then like have that where it's like waits 30 minutes and then re-enable it.
Yeah. So the next way to do that would be to use something like Due, you know, the app DUE. You can actually trigger workflows using that app. It's like a timer and scheduling app, but you can have it launch a URL, and that URL could be a workflow, and then you could run it that way. So you could definitely Heath Robinson that whole thing.
I just ruined your weekend. Sorry.
Yep, I got myself a job.
So next thing on the list is a master passcode for supervised devices.
Yeah, this is never going to happen, but we can dream, right? I've got like 125 iPads to deal with, and every one of them is assigned to an individual user, and the individual user has a password on their iPad. Now, fortunately, I know all those passwords because I made them up and gave them to them, but just occasionally somebody changes their password. They're actually not really supposed to be able to, but occasionally people have managed to do it. But what that means is whenever I have to get into an iPad, I either have to find the pupil and get them to put the password in for me, or I have to go and look at my spreadsheet, which is boring as well. So ideally, what I would really like to be able to do is to deploy by configuration profile a master password to all these student devices, where either the student's password or my password would unlock the device. Now, I suppose you can sort of see exactly what kind of problem that is. And I'm pretty sure Apple's privacy stance is such that that will never happen. But I think in some cases in K-12 settings, Apple's privacy stance is actually wrong. I think they're far too strongly in favor of the student privacy and not enabling enough of the institutional control of the device as well. So I think I would really like that. It would be a game changer for me in terms of effort. But I can see why they're not doing it as well. The only other option is to push an NDM command to clear the passcode on the device, but that requires the device be on the Wi-Fi, and then of course you've got to go and set up the password again afterwards, so it doesn't help that much.
Next thing on the list is system-wide split-screen drag and drop between apps. So we saw this between recently with the developer group Riddle. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Riddle, I think it is.
Riddle, yeah. So they and all their apps, they now have drag and drop between the two and split screen using like a local HTTP server. And I think that would be really fantastic for all apps to have that. And you could just drag and drop, you know, email attachments from you know, pictures from the pictures app right in there. And I think that would be, I think that would actually be fantastic.
Yeah, and similarly, the idea of having split screen setups that you can save and restore, I think that's a great idea. I know that's your idea, Bradley, but I'm stealing it because it was my idea too. The idea that you often have pairs of apps that work together, like I think your examples here are like Safari and Pages, or maybe Keynote and Safari, or things like that. Just being able to pair up two devices like Mail and Calendar or Mail and OmniFocus would be really cool to be able to do that kind of thing. So there's a lot could be done with split screen. I would also like the ability to be able to flip the side for both apps. You know, if you had a button in the middle, or if you could, you know, like double tap on the divider or something, and the app on the right would go to the left and so on. The reason for that is often if I've got a handwriting app up, I always seem to, you know, bring in another app and the handwriting app moves over and stuff, and I never have it where I want it to be. So there's a lot could be done there, I think.
Yeah, think of like, kind of like folders, but for app configurations. I don't know what that would even look like in practice, but
I think it looks like in practice is you set up two apps side by side in the order you want them, and then somewhere there's a button that says save this, and what it does is it just saves the icons of both of those apps. If you imagine them like overlapping cards, they just get saved to a new home screen icon, and when you tap the icon, both those apps launch in that configuration. That could work.
Yeah, well, and I'd love to see, too, like you mentioned about being able to flip the apps to where right now the right app in split screen is kind of a secondary app, yeah, and the left one is still the main, and kind of eliminate that where they can just both be main. Like you could just, you know, if you're working in the, if you have the, if you want to ditch the left one, you want to work on the right one, be able to do the opposite on the left side.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason that the left-hand app is the main app, that only really has an impact when you come to having your iPad connected to a secondary display, like a projector. Because then, if you want to have Keynote running and have Keynote on the big screen and your Keynote on your screen plus something else, you've got to have Keynote on the left because the left app is the one that has control of the external screen. And the right-hand app doesn't have that control. So if you play Keynote in the right-hand side of the split view, it just plays inside its own space. Whereas if you play it on the left-hand side, it plays on the big screen. So being able to manipulate that in more complex ways, I think, would be pretty useful.
See, next up on the list is yours, blank external screens when entering passwords.
Do I need to say more? The reason is probably quite obvious is that, you know, every so often, you'll be prompted for a password for something when you're using iOS, and if you've got it up on the screen in front of a class, the class can now see your password. And either you unplug your iPad or turn off AirPlay, or you just try and type it fast enough that nobody can keep up with you, which often leads you to get it wrong anyway. So,
yes,
yeah, I think they should even just like blank the keyboard and blank out the field. You know, you keep the rest up or whatever, but. Because iOS always knows when you're typing a password in because you're using a password type field, yeah? There's security that can be done there. They already do things like they prevent you from using a third-party keyboard to type in a password. You've always got to use Apple's keyboard. So there are some special case things happen for typing in passwords already, and I think that's something else that should happen too.
All right, what's next? Oh, this is yours. This is interesting. This was, I remember hearing this on, I think it was your episode of Canvas with Merlin Mann.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned this in Canvas, and I think it's relevant to education, highly relevant to education, which is Apple Pencil support on top of any screen, right? So what I'm meaning here is that I could pick up the Apple Pencil and I could just draw on top of the iPad screen no matter which app was there and whether or not that app had actually implemented support for Pencil support. So the idea being that quite often, you know, you're called upon to teach a class how to use a specific app, and the ability to highlight and draw and draw arrows and boxes around about elements on the screen would make it really helpful in terms of being able to illuminate that to the class. I suppose a related idea also is to visually show on the screen where touches have landed when you're connected to an external display. You've been in the Genius Bar, Bradley, and you've seen those videos that they have at the back where they have a little circle that floats around, and it sort of it highlights whenever you're supposed to tap on something. It's supposed to show you how to tap on things on the iPad screen. Something like that, where if you tap on the screen, a circle appears with a radiating color or something on the big display so that students can see where you tapped or where you dragged or where you moved your finger. There's a lot could be done for that.
Well, I agree. And then we pair that with our hope for system-wide screen recording as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because there's a framework called ReplayKit that lets you do that. But every app that wants to use it has to implement it by itself. The only app I've got that supports it is Swift Playgrounds. But it's really cool because both you and the students can make videos of what your code did and things like that. But I think that should be elevated to system-wide feature as well, so that you can either live stream or just record your screen and save it as a video.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. That would be fantastic. Okay, what's next? iTunes U 4.0.
Yeah, this is something that I would kind of like to see. I mean, I'd like to see it, you know, tomorrow if I could get it. But I don't know whether this is a WWDC thing or not. But iTunes U is feeling pretty old, to be honest with you. iTunes U 3.5 is the most recent version, I think. And over the past maybe year to year and a half, Apple really haven't put very much into iTunes U in terms of actual teacher features. What they've done is they've done a lot of work to make iTunes U work with Apple School Manager and managed Apple IDs and things like that, but there haven't been any new app features for quite a long time. And as a result, we have things like iTunes U does not support split screen, for example. There's all kinds of new post content that I would want to put in there. Like, imagine you could embed a YouTube video inside your iTunes U post. Like, how great would that be? Using different kinds of colors, colored text, tables, maybe even markdown support. All of these things would be great in terms of making it easier for teachers to create more engaging content in iTunes U. But the last thing we had was when Apple added support for putting an image in a post, which is great. It actually makes a big difference to the engagement to your lessons. But that was like 2015 that happened, you know, and not a lot of engineering work has gone into the kind of teacher-facing aspect of iTunes U in a while. The other thing that I want from iTunes U, which is something that I think Google Classroom has got this and a lot of CMSs have got this, is timed posts, right? So quite often, you know, if I'm traveling or something, I'll set up a bunch of work in iTunes U, but the only thing I can do is either somehow manage to remember to do it at the right time in some other time zone, or just put all the posts for the week out at the start of the week or the week before I go, and then the kids have got it all. But if I could say, right, this lesson has to go out at 9 a.m. on Monday, this lesson at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, and this lesson at 3 p.m. on Friday, I would love that, and they could just roll out to my classes as time goes on. And even if I'm not traveling, even if I was there, I would still use that feature just so I don't forget to post the things I need to post over the course of the day. So please, please, please.
Next up on the list is Configurator 3.0. Yeah, and I would agree with you. Configurator is not bad right now. I mean, I think it's because I'm using it not at all, just mainly with the initial deployment. And so... Yeah.
I kind of agree with you. I think there's a couple of things that could maybe be made a bit easier. You know, you and I both use... I don't know if you do, actually, or not. I do use private pre-shared key on our AirHive Wi-Fi. Which is basically the idea that everybody has their own unique password for the Wi-Fi, and that identifies the device to the Wi-Fi. And this becomes a bit of a pain if you're using Apple Configurator to mass configure a whole bunch of iPads, because what you have to do is, what the usual technique is to set up another SSID, do the MDM enrollment through that, and then take away the SSID and let the user put in their own Wi-Fi password afterwards. It's kind of frustrating, though, because if you want to do a bunch of MDM work on those devices, you have to either keep that open SSID up or you have to go around and put in the Wi-Fi password into each of the devices separately. So it's there's maybe ways you can do that. I don't know, in terms of like, can you maybe use Jamf to auto-generate individual Wi-Fi profiles? I don't think you could do that. There's not really a password field as such in there. So that's something that Configurator 3 could fix. But for my money, you know, I put it in there because you kind of think it's time that Configurator got a bump. But I don't see, I wouldn't say it's as pressing a need to say a heavy revision to iTunes U, for example.
Yeah, we're not using the private pre-shared key. We have a pre-shared key for our student network, but then none of the kids even know it, though, because I just deploy it via the and then we have a guest network. If somebody had a phone or something, there's a guest network with a little bit tighter security.
I was going to just say I've toyed with taking it away, with the idea that I could just, you know, deploy a single password to all the devices and that would be it. But it helps me kind of see who's doing what traffic. That's been quite helpful from time to time, see who's spending just too much time on YouTube over the course of the week.
One of the things we got, I solved a problem today is we upgraded the firmware on our firewall and now has enforced Google Safe Search. So I mentioned that problem 6 months ago, and that problem is now been solved. So we enforce that via the firewall. Not sure how it does it, but it does work.
That would be something that could be done on iOS as well. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. That could be, because they obviously just have so many, a limited number of search options on there for like Google and Bing and DuckDuckGo, I think, and maybe Yahoo. And yeah, you could just enforce Safe Search system wide. So that problem solved, and I tested it today. I put it in private mode on Safari, search for, something related to naked people, and I got it. And then I clicked the button, click save, and then the same search, and it was completely different. So seemed to work fine. Next thing, Swift Playgrounds 2.0. This has been a busy year for Swift.
Oh, yes, it has, absolutely. And, I mean, I want to stress here that I have no knowledge of what is happening with Swift Playgrounds, the app. All I've done is given, you know, a ton of feedback based on our year of teaching Swift. But I have a number of things that I would like to see in that app. But the one of the biggest ones, actually, is a kind of presenter mode for it, where at the moment when I'm teaching the class, all I can do is like mirror my iPad to the screen, and then it's all seen in the same proportions as if you were looking at it close up. But quite often the text is too small for kids to read further back in the class. So I end up using the screen zoom function, the accessibility function, to make it bigger for them, which can be quite a footer and a hassle to kind of keep it in the right place and scroll it properly and all that kind of stuff. So what I'd really like to see is some way of like reformatting the screen so that the text is bigger and more readable for kids while the solution is also still visible. But beyond that, Bradley, the biggest thing I would like out of the next evolution of the Learn to Code program and Swift Playground and stuff is a roadmap for what's going to happen next. Because one of my kind of issues with the whole Learn to Code thing at the moment is it's a wee bit difficult for me to plan what I'm going to do here, because Apple are like working on curriculum stuff, but they're not telling us, and it just drops one day and that's the end of it. You know, because like Learn to Code 3, for example, which is the third book in the series, nobody knew that was coming out. And it came out, I can't remember when, like last November or something. And it was like, well, when was that planned, right? Where am I going to fit that in? And the answer is I'm just not going to do it, because at least at this point, I've kind of committed to a certain schedule of units over a certain number of years, and I've got space for Learn to Code 1 and Learn to Code 2, but I don't really have time in the schedule for Learn to Code 3. So I think what Apple should really do with Swift Playgrounds is, at least for the curriculum content, if not for the app, right? I mean, if you want to keep app feature secret, maybe okay. But I think there really needs to be a strong culture of openness around what these materials are and what they're going to be. Because, I mean, what's the point in keeping it secret, right? All you guarantee is that it's even harder for people to adopt your materials because they didn't know what was coming and they can't schedule it and all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, it's not as if like another company are going to come out with a book that's the same as yours if you tell them what you're going to do. I mean, maybe they do, but it's not going to be a Swift book, right? And it's not going to have Apple's brand, and it's not going to be built with all the tools that Apple build it with and so on. So I think really there needs to be a wee bit of a change in terms of the level of openness about how things are getting built for Swift, and particularly at the curriculum level. But it would be helpful to know what was coming for the app as well. But certainly the curriculum content is very important, that we know what their intentions are and how much they're going to produce and what it's going to look like and all that kind of stuff. And even if there was like even a public beta program or something like that, or a bug tracker or a roadmap or something like that, the same that they actually have for Swift the language. I mean, if they can open source the language itself and do all that stuff, then maybe they could open source the books as well. Be great.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying the app, right? I'm not saying open source the app, but even, you know, get the book content up on GitHub and help people start to understand it better would be really a big move forward.
Last thing on the list is Apple Classroom 2.1, and your idea here is fantastic, so I'll let you say it in all your glory.
Yeah. Two things, really, right? The first one, which enables the second one, is to support the iPhone, because at the moment, Apple Classroom is only for the iPad. But I think it should also work on the phone. And the reason I say that, and I'm not saying like you should be able to supervise students' iPhones, but what I'm saying is that teachers should be able to have Apple Classroom on their phones to control their class with. Right? And I'll tell you why this is because when I'm teaching, I have my iPad up and I'm, for example, Swift Playgrounds. I'm working in Swift Playgrounds. I'm doing all this stuff. And yes, Apple Classroom does support split view, so you can put, you know, Apple Classroom in one quarter of your screen and have three quarters for Playgrounds, but you don't always necessarily want every student's behavior to be up on the screen for all the other students to see. So what I've taken to doing is I pulled one of the iPad minis out of our stock of spares, and I now teach with an iPad mini just running Apple Classroom and my actual iPad running my actual stuff. So I'm sort of two iPads now, and I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, this is crazy. So if I was able to have Apple Classroom on my phone, then I could have my phone beside me just running Classroom, and I could have my, obviously my phone would need to be supervised or whatever, probably, or at least enrolled in MDM, I think. And then you could do stuff like that. Now, where this gets really good fun is you could then have an Apple Watch app for Apple Classroom, which would enable you to, with one button, just lock the current class. And I would use that all the time. That would be so much fun, just to be able to sort of stealthily lock your whole class. And I think another thing that would be cool for that is also to have a widget on your phone. So you just go into the widget view and you could just, you know, look at the current class and lock it as well. So having Apple Classroom on the phone for teachers, I think there's a pretty good case to be made for having that there.
Well, absolutely. And then you've also, that would enable, like, let's say if you had a school that gives, you know, teachers laptops, for, you know, they have MacBook Airs for the teachers and then iPads for the students. Well, yeah. Then they would be able to take advantage of Apple Classroom, assuming they had the phone. And then also, you know, a Mac app for Apple Classroom wouldn't be a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, you've got Apple, what's it called, Apple Remote Desktop, but it's not quite the same thing, you know, and we used Apple Remote Desktop back in the day for, it's basically a kind of super duper, much more powerful version of Apple Classroom for Macs. But no teachers ever really got a grip of Apple Remote Desktop. It was too complicated. It was really a sysadmin tool rather than a teacher tool. And I think what we need to be very careful about is not overcomplicating Apple Classroom. It must remain a very simple tool so that every teacher can get the benefit of it. But just the simple idea of taking the app that exists at the moment and putting it on the phone, that's all I'm asking for. And in fact, because it supports split view, Apple Classroom already supports the size of screen. It supports the dimensions, the size class of an iPhone. So why not? It's just a simple matter of programming, he says, without really knowing the details of it. But yeah, I think that would be certainly for me, it would save me having to carry two iPads around just to get more done.
Yeah, I agree there. That would be a great feature. And again, like you said, should be fairly straightforward. So that's our 17 things we're hoping to see soon. It's a lot of nitpicky stuff, but again, it's fun to brainstorm and go after this like high-level fruit that would just make our life just a tad bit easier. I'm all about things that give me 5 minutes more a day.
Absolutely. And it's great that we are being so nitpicky now. I mean, I can't really explain to people how far we've come in terms of iOS deployment. I mean, it's so much easier now. So much easier, so much faster, and so much more reliable than it ever has been before. And the extent to which you can control things in iOS, unbelievable. It's way, way, way beyond anything that's ever been before. So these are really kind of some enhancements, some minor tweaks, and you know, things like splitting up the two Bluetooth settings and things like that. That's how nitpicky we're getting about how we want our profiles to be set up. And it's great to be in this position, I guess.
I totally agree. We'll leave it there and see what happens at WWDC. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. And I hope you have a great start to your summer vacation for you guys that are out of school. And you can find me on the web at chambersdaily.com, on Twitter at Bradley Chambers. You can find our website at outofschool.net with all of our show notes as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.